Hare Krishna. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 11th canto, chapter all about Gyan. And this is verse 26. So what's happened so far, we're going to probably go back to it in a few minutes, is that Uddhava asked one question about why do different sages categorize the material world in different ways. And Krishna took 24 verses to explain that. And now Uddhava is asking his second question. There's actually four questions that Uddhava asks in this chapter. And so we are looking at the second question today. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, Sri Uddhava Uvacha. Prakriti Purushascho Bhau. Yadyapyatma vilakshano anyodyapasra yat krishna jishyate, jishyate na bidhatayo prakrito lakshyate hyatma Prakritischa tatamani. Prakriti purushascho bhau. Yadyapyatma vilakshano. Anyodyapasrayat krishna. Chisyate na bidhaitayo. Prakrito lakshate hyatma. Prakritischa tatmani. Please chant. Prakriti purushascho bhau. That was so loud, you can cover everybody now. We don't have to do any more chanting. But we'll do a couple more. Krishna. Jishyate tadnyanatmana. Prakritischa tatmani. Sri Uddhava uvacha. Prakriti purushascho bhau. Yadyapi vilakshana. Krishna Chishyatena Buddhatayo Prakrito Vakshate Yatma Ladies? Stereo. Very good. That was stereo. two for the price of one. Okay, so let's go over the word for word for this. So, Sri Uddhava Avacha, we all know what that means. We all know what that means, right? That Uddhava said. And Prakriti, Prabhupada often translates as nature. And Purusha, the enjoyer, the living entity. Cha means and. Abhau means both. And then Yadi Api means although. And here, you know, these words take on different meanings depending on the context. So here the word Atma is translated as constitutionally. And Vilakshano is distinct. Anyodhya means mutual. And Apasrayat means because of shelter. Now this next one's really easy. Krishna. What does that mean? Very good. Yes, means Lord Krishna. Drishyate na. So we know drishyate means to see, right? So na drishyate does not appear. Bidha, any difference, like a chincha beta, right? Beta, right? Tayo means between them. Prakrito means within nature. And lakshyate means is apparently seen. He, anyone, how do we usually translate he? Certainly or indeed. Atma, this case, Atma means the soul. Prakriti, again, nature, cha, and tata also, and atmani in the soul. So Uddhava is asking the second question of this chapter to Lord Krishna. And he says, or he inquires, although nature and the living entity are constitutionally distinct, O Lord Krishna, there appears to be no difference between them because they are found residing within one another. Thus, the soul appears to be within nature and nature within the soul. Now, if that didn't make sense to you, don't worry, because it shouldn't make sense to you, because it's Uddhava explaining how conditioned souls see things, not how, you know, how Maya affects us. Let's hear the purport. Sri Uddhava here expresses the doubt that arises in the heart of an ordinary conditioned soul. So the kind of doubt that anyone would have. Although the Vedic scriptures declare that the material body is a temporary fabrication. What does fabrication mean? Does it mean fabric like this? What? Joining the things. No. Makeup. Yeah, fabrication means falsity or illusion. Right? It's a fabrication. Right? Like that. Yes. Okay, so that, in this case it means Maya, basically. Okay. So it says here that although the Vedic literatures declare that the material body is a temporary fabrication of the material modes of nature, the conscious living entity within the body is actually an eternal spirit soul. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna has declared the material elements constituting the body to be his separated inferior energy. Anyone know that verse? Separated material energy? Bhumirapona lavoyo kangmano buduyevicha ahankara. Bina prakritir asita. Bina means separated. So yes, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego, Krishna says, this is my separated material energy. Whereas the living entity is the superior conscious energy of the Lord. That's the next verse. What's the next verse? Aparyasitastanga, that one? Yes. Okay. Then Krishna says, besides the inferior, there's a superior who's us, the soul. So he says here, whereas the living entity is superior conscious energy of the Lord. Still, in conditioned life, the material body and the conditioned soul appear to be inseparable and thus non-different. Right? Basically, most people think that they are their body. Right? They don't, even if they study some Bhagavad Gita, still they look in the mirror and they say, that is me. Right? Because the living entity enters within the womb of a mother and gradually comes out in a developed body, the soul appears to have entered deeply within material nature. Similarly, by the soul's identification with the material body, the body appears to enter deeply within the consciousness of the soul. What is more, the body cannot exist without the presence of the soul. By this apparent mutual dependence, the difference between the body and the soul is obscured. What does obscured mean? Hidden, yes, covered, yes, right. So the reality is covered by this false identification. Sri Uddhava therefore questions the Lord in order to clarify this issue. And so we will hear in subsequent many more verses the answer to this question. Actually, Krishna answers the question right away. But I thought I would take your permission, or actually I won't even take your permission, I'll just do it without your permission. And that is to review what this chapter has covered so far, because from my point of view, this is a very significant chapter. This first part is really significant, and I don't know how many of you have been following it, but we'll talk about it briefly. So in previous verses, in previous chapters, we had heard about Varnashram Dharma and about Karma Yoga. And now we're hearing Gyan. We're hearing Gyan is, you know, the knowledge of this world, like the last six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita focus on Gyan. Also the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita from verse 11 to verse 30 is about Gyan, how we're not this body and the makeup of the material world like that. And so Uddhava asked this question at the beginning of this chapter, where he says, why do different philosophers look at the material world differently? Because Krishna, you said there's basically 28 elements. And he said, but some of them say there's 25, some of them say there's 7, some of them say there's 9, some of them say there's 4, 11, 17, 16, and 13. There's all these different ways of looking at the same thing, material nature. What's going on? And Krishna answers in the fourth verse of this chapter. He says, because all material elements are present everywhere, shanti sarvatra, it is reasonable that different brahmanas have analyzed them in different ways. So okay, he's saying it's okay. The different brahmanas looked at it all differently. All such philosophers spoke under the shelter of my mystic potency, Maya. And thus they could say anything without contradicting the truth. So here Krishna is giving an interesting hint. He said they're not contradicting each other. And in the purport, they quote Jiva Goswami by saying here the word Maya doesn't mean Mahamaya, illusion. It means Krishna's mystic power. It says, Srila Jiva Goswami states that the word Maya in this verse does not refer to Mahamaya or the potency of ignorance, but to the Lord's inconceivable mystic power, which shelters the learned followers of Vedic knowledge. Each of the philosophers mentioned here reveals a particular aspect of the truth, and their theories are not contradictory, since they are simply describing the same phenomena with different categorical systems. So in other words, they're looking at the same thing from different points of view. So don't we do that also? Right? If you ask a policeman, right, policemen are often brought to the scene of a car accident, and they sometimes want to interview different witnesses to see what they say. And most policemen will tell you if you interview three people, you often get three different accounts of what happened. Because everyone's looking at it from their point. One person was standing over there, one person was standing over there, one person standing over here, and they're looking at it from different points of view. Right? What's a classic example in the Bhagavatam of looking at something from different points of view? People go, no, I can't hear you. Say it louder. Speak loudly like this, Prabhu. Yeah, very. Okay, when Ashwatthama was punished, people looked at him differently. Draupadi said, he's a Brahmin, we can't harm him. And others were saying, right, yes. That's the one I was thinking of. Krishna enters the wrestling arena, right? What did Kamsa see him as? death personified. Who else was watching him? Nanda Maharaj, what did he think? My little boy, what's he doing with fighting this Kamsa, right? And the gopis also noticed, right? So they were all looking at the same Krishna, but seeing differently, right? It's a great example. Thank you, Prabhu. So we do that also. We look at things from different points of view. But when we see something different than another Prabhu, another devotee, then it's time to fight, right? So we're getting a lesson here. We're going to develop this a little bit more in a few more verses. But we're getting a little hint here that sometimes people can have different points of view and they can both be right. Yes? Right? If a temple gets a big donation, right, or a reasonable donation, and the head pujari wants to make another beautiful outfit for Radha Gopinath, right, and the Sankirtan leader says, no, we want to print more books. So who's right? Both of them, yeah, right? They both want to do service to Krishna. Yeah. But sometimes they'll say, oh, Maya, deity worship, book distribution is the most important. Oh, book distribution, deities are directly, I mean, right. So let's develop this a little bit more. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he comments on this fourth verse, and he says, why is there a dispute at all? He's quoting Krishna. And he says, because of my Maya's bewilderment. My Maya gives them the ability to dispute for as long as the sun and moon exist. Do any of us ever have a conflict with someone else? Maybe family member or whatever, another devotee or this or that. And it just seems like I am not going to give in. Prabhupada tells that story, right, about the person who the two people are fighting. You know this story, but I'll repeat it anyway. That one is saying the best way to cut something is with a scissor. Another person says, no, the best way is to cut it with a knife. And they get more and more in a big fight, right? And finally the person with the saying that the knife is better pushes the person who says the scissors is better in the river, right? And the person swims for a little while, but he can't swim any longer. And just before he drowns, he puts his hand above the water and goes like this. So even when he's dying, he has to win the argument. Right? Or as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying, sometimes we can get so absorbed in being right that the dispute can go on as long as the sun and the moon exist. Sometimes it's said that we have a choice. We can be right or we can be happy. And sometimes we get very stubborn and we always want to be right. So we'll talk about this a little bit more. I'm bringing this up because my service is, for those of you who don't know me, is in conflict resolution. I did that. I lived in India for 20 years, and I used to be a consultant for the Supreme Court of India, training judges in conflict resolution. And now I work for the government in America, but I also, within ISKCON, I help to solve conflicts. So this passage in the Bhagavatam, which we just happened to be studying, I've always considered very important in my service and in talking about how to get along with other devotees. Okay, so we did Vishnav Chakravarti Thakur. So, yes, if we don't settle some of our conflicts in this life, we may have to settle them in future lives. Isn't it? Could you imagine having to come back just because, you thought that a small sika is better than a big sika, or whatever, right? So the question is, can devotees resolve conflicts? And Krishna talks about this two verses in the sixth verse of this very same chapter. And he says, by interaction of my energies, different opinions arise. So in one sense, the different opinions, ultimately, everything comes from Krishna. But for those who have fixed their intelligence on me and control their senses, differences of perceptions disappear. And consequently, the very cause for argument is removed. So it says here, if we fix our intelligence on Krishna, and connected with fixing our intelligence on Krishna certainly is in fixing our intelligence in the spiritual master's instructions, right? And there's many things to be said about that. We know, or some of us may know, that that Srila Prabhupada got his inspiration to preach Krishna consciousness in the West by reading the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on the second chapter, verse 41 of the Gita, where it says that one should take the spiritual master's orders as one's life and soul. And Prabhupada used to tell the give the example in terms of devotees getting along with each other. He talked about Aesop's fables. And he gave the father is instructing his sons, and he tells them to bring him a bunch of sticks, right? So he puts the bunch of sticks in a cloth bag, and he says, try to break it, right? And all the boys, they're trying, and they can't break it, right? And he says, now take it out of the bag. Now just take one stick and break it. Oh, no problem, right? So he gave this example that if we work together cooperatively without arguing with each other, nothing can break us. But if we go on fighting with each other, and it's easy. It's one of Maya's greatest tricks is to have disputes amongst devotees. Even Prabhupada said once that externally nothing can stop ISKCON from being successful. Only thing that can stop it is internally if we fight with each other. So it's actually a service to the spiritual master, service to Krishna, to have trusting, warm relationships with one another. And this Krishna says in several places in the Bhagavad Gita, Machchita, Makata, Prana, Bodha, Yantas, Parasparam, that devotees come together. He doesn't say, my devotees come together and they fight like cats and dogs. No, he doesn't say that, right? He says, my devotees come together and what do? They talk about Krishna and they share their realizations. So then Krishna concludes in the ninth verse. He says, therefore, no matter which of these thinkers is speaking, and regardless of whether in their calculations they include material elements within their previous subtle causes, or else within their subsequent manifest products, I accept their conclusions as authoritative, because a logical explanation can always be given for each of the different theories. So he's basically saying that regardless of the different opinions among the sages have a common interest. They have a common interest of serving Krishna, of explaining Krishna's transcendental position in this case. So we have a common interest, right? Just like we believe in oneness in one sense, right? We believe in a oneness of desire, that all of our desires are linked with Krishna's desires. And all of us have the desire to serve Krishna. So we have that common purpose. This is from a letter Srila Prabhupada wrote. He said, disunity between individual souls is so strong within this material world that even in the society of Krishna consciousness, members sometimes appear disunited due to their having different opinions and leaning toward material things. Actually, in Krishna consciousness, there cannot be two opinions. There is only one goal, to serve Krishna to one's best ability. If there is some disagreement over service, such a disagreement should be taken as spiritual. Those who are actually engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be disunited in any circumstance. So if we have a difference of opinion with another devotee, we should take it as spiritual, not take it so seriously. Right? It's the modes of material nature. make a, just like in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, in the 20th and 21st verse, right? Krishna talks about the mode of goodness. And he says that that knowledge by which one undivided spiritual nature is seen in all living entities, though they are divided in innumerable forms, you should understand to be in the mode of goodness. So when you see the unity, that's more the mode of goodness. But passion is when one sees in every different body different types of living entities. That's the mode of passion. Passion makes us focus on our differences. Goodness makes us focus on our similarities. And ISKCON has so many differences. That's one of the beauties of ISKCON. Right? You have devotees from all over the world. My guess is that I was brought up in New York. I'm thinking I probably had a different childhood than most of you. Yeah? Correct? Right? Yeah? You didn't listen to the Beatles? You're in Maya. So we have different upbringings. We have different levels of education. We come from different cultures. We have different purva samskars, right? Impressions from previous lives. And we have so many differences. But we have this one, we have so many things that unify us. Srila Prabhupada's instructions, the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? But sometimes we focus on the differences instead of the similarities. Right? And we all have differences. Like, I do not like Loki Sabji. Do not like Loki Sabji. Right? But I love, any Gujaratis here? I love Dal Dokali, my favorite. Right? And then someone else will say, you don't like Loki Sabji? Maya, I love Loki Sabji. Right? We can have a big fight over Loki Sabji. You can fight over anything when the mode of passion engages us or overwhelms us. But we should be very careful of that because it's a service to Srila Prabhupada, it's a service to Lord Krishna to have loving exchanges. Oh, thank you. Water, yes. You know, what is that? One of the principles in the Bhagavad Gita is Samadarshina. Right? What's that verse? Suni chaiva swapakhe cha pandita samadarshina, right? It says whether the modern day translation is whether you're from New York or Mumbai, you should see people with samadarshina. They were all spiritual. Nitya siddha Krishna prema sadhu kapanoi shravanadi sudha chaiti karayo. Everyone has love of Krishna in their heart. But again, we have to be so careful of the mode of passion which pushes us to see differences and disagree with our God brothers and God sisters. And we should learn to celebrate the difference. Prabhupada used this phrase, unity in diversity. And he said that every year, the senior devotees in ISKCON should go to Mayapur and discuss unity in diversity. Because he said, as we fight over diversity, that's the material platform. So we have to be, we should be like those pack of sticks, unbreakable, even though we have differences of opinions about some things. There's always going to be differences. There's so much variety in this world. There has to be. But we have to be careful not to be distracted. I was listening. You know, on the cell phones, there's this app called Kathamrita. Anyone familiar with that? Right. So it's like a 24-hour radio. So when I was taking prasadam yesterday, I clicked on it or whatever. I touched it, and then I listened to one of Radhanath Swami's lectures. And I can't remember exactly. I remember the second part. He was saying something like, "If you're on your deathbed, or you're in a really terrible situation," he said, "you're not going to remember, you're not going to be thinking, oh, my mother-in-law said something really bad to me last week." Right? That's not going to be on our mind, right? Or your sister-in-law. I think he said sister-in-law, then he said mother-in-law. But we can get so easily distracted. Maya's trick is to distract us. We quoted, we alluded to that verse, Vyava Sayat Mikabudir Ekeha. Right? That we have to, you know, part of being Krishna conscious is really being fixed in our determination that I want to be a devotee. I don't want to get distracted because there's unlimited distractions in this world. There was a poet in the 1930s. Maybe some of you have heard of him. He's kind of famous. His name was T.S. Eliot. Anyone ever heard of T.S. Eliot? Yes, there's a scholar there. Very good. And he had this one line in the poem. It said, distracted from distractions by distractions. And this is 1930s, and he considered one of the greatest demons in the world was newspapers. He said, there you are, thinking of God or whatever, or thinking of, you know, the world or nature or whatever, and then your newspaper comes, and you get so distracted. So imagine what he would say about cell phones. These are the incarnation of distractions. Right? Because in 1 second, we were talking yesterday, if you, 30 years ago, if I would have said, tell me what the weather is like in Papua New Guinea, right? You'd have to, I don't know what you would do 30 years ago to find that out. But now, all of us, within 10 seconds, maybe 15 seconds, you can find out the weather in Papua New Guinea. And all kinds, unlimited, useless information. Right? That distracts us from the goal. And though of all the different distractions, perhaps the greatest distraction is being in conflict with another devotee. Because that is so dangerous. Because when we do that, we can commit offenses. And we shouldn't be afraid of global warming so much. We shouldn't be afraid of terrorism. We shouldn't be afraid of this and that, but we should be very afraid of Vaishnava aparad. That's the one thing. Offending other Vaishnavas is the one thing that can, for a very long time at least, choke our devotional progress. And that may be one of the tricks that Maya has in store for us. So here's another letter from Prabhupada where he says, the devotees of Krishna, listen to this carefully. Ready? I know most of you are sleeping, but now you can wake up. Okay. The devotees of Krishna are the most exalted persons on the planet. Better than kings, all of them. He didn't say some of them or the ones that we like, the ones that like Loki Subji. Yeah. All of them. So we should always remember that. And like the bumblebee, always look for the nectar or the best qualities in a person. Not like the utopians who are like the flies who always go to the open sores or to find the faults in a person. And because they cannot find any utopia, utopia, you understand, means like ideal world. Or because they cannot find anyone without faults, they want to become void, merge, nothing. They think that is utopia, to become void of personality. So if there is sometimes slight disagreements between devotees, it is not due to impersonalism, but it is because they are persons, and such disagreements should not be taken very seriously. The devotee is always pessimistic about the material world, but is very optimistic about spiritual life. So in this way, you should consider that anyone engaged in Krishna's service is always the best person. I am very pleased that you are assisting your godbrother so nicely. Yes, this is our real position, to be servants of the servants of the servants. So here, Prabhupada is, you know, but our mind can get so, just like, don't we, Kamsa had such deep meditation on Krishna, didn't he? He was fixed. We wish we had that kind of fixedness. Of course, it wasn't unequal. It wasn't favorable. Right? But sometimes when you, I hate to admit it, but sometimes the people we don't like, we can be more focused in thinking of them than the people we love. Isn't it? Sometimes it can be like that. So that's another trick of the illusory energy. So I was thinking, what time, when do we go to, like, noon or one or two? What time? No. 10 o'clock. Acha? Really? But leave a lot of time for questions? Okay. All right. Well, first of all, actually, why don't we, I have one more point to make, one more section, but why don't we see if there's any questions now about this idea of getting along with one another and avoiding the mode of passion, seeing that we can have different opinions and both be right, like that. Some questions, comments? Yes? Your microphone is there for you.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, my question was that...
It was or is?
Is.
Okay.
So people tend to have different opinions sometimes, perspectives are different, and it is nice to get along, seeing the positive. But sometimes when you're in an environment of people around you, they think differently than what you think. And sometimes even that creates conflict. You cannot... sustain somebody's, for example, the scissor and knife. The person with the scissor could not tolerate the other person liked knife better, or vice versa. So, how to overcome that?
Well, first, let's say that there is sometimes absolutely right and absolutely wrong. Right? If somebody says, meat eating is very good for spiritual life. Right? That's just wrong. You don't just say, well, you have your opinion, I respect that. No, right? So that's not what we're talking about, just to make that clear. Right? There's boundaries in which what we're talking about, the boundaries of guru, sadhu, and shastra. Right? So, is that clear? We're not just, as Prabhupada would sometimes quote that just as many paths, yato mat tato pat, right? That we don't ascribe to that. There are some things, especially based on Shastra, that we know are right and we know are wrong. TK? So that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about when two devotees have desires to serve Krishna or see, even maybe look at a Shastric quote and see it from a different point of view. And so what we should do is we should sit down and try to understand their point of view. Then we can see if we really agree or disagree. But sometimes we're so fixed in whatever we think is right that we don't take the time to really understand where another person is coming from. In the Bhagavad Gita, there's that verse that says, he is a perfect yogi who, by comparison of his own self, sees the true equality of all beings, both in happiness and distress, O Arjuna. Right? So empathy is a... important thing in Vaishnava relationships, to try to understand, instead of saying, oh, that's bogus, better to say, Prabhu, help, I'm curious, could you explain to me more why you think like that? Right. Prabhu, can I borrow your chasma? Yes. So it's just like this. I did this yesterday with the brahmacharis. So we see the world the way we see the world, right? We see the world through our eye, through our lens, right? So empathy means to, pretty similar. Pretty good. I'll trade. Yeah. No. Empathy means to try to see the world through someone else's eyes. Right? They say to walk a mile or to walk 2 kilometers in someone else's shoes. Right? So that's one thing is to be curious when a devotee has a different opinion than us. To say, oh, could you help me explain that to me more so I can see where you're coming from? We may not agree with them after that, but we can always respect someone even if we have a different opinion than them. Did that answer your question? Yeah? Okay. Yes?
My question is not today's lecture, but it is regarding Sukrut Karma, that is, the Sukruti of previous lives. Because of the Sukruti, we get association of devotees in this life, we come in Krishna consciousness. I met this ISKCON movement. So my question is now, when I am in this movement, because of my some karma, like prarabdha karma or some sanchit karma of previous lives, and now I'm doing bhakti, so will that bhakti nullify all my prarabdha and sanchit, because I am now in ISKCON movement. So that Sukrut like karma that will help me what? Like all these things.
You're right, it had nothing to do with this class. but I'll answer it briefly since you're such a sincere soul. There's a certain attitude of bhakti that we want to inculcate, right? And the whether in previous lives we had done some what is called bhakti unmukh sukriti, malamne, how do we know, right? But the Srila Prabhupada told us, he gave us the a very devotional answer to that, by that we should think that I didn't have any sukriti, but by the causeless mercy of my spiritual master, I have come in contact with this bhakti. It's by his mercy and by Krishna's mercy. Instead of thinking, oh, I must have been Paka Brahmana in last life. Suchinam Shimitam Gehe Yoga Brashta Vijayate. Right? No, we don't, you know, and that therefore, you know, that's not the way we should be thinking. Rather, we're thinking, you know, like we said in the beginning of class, did we say it? Did I say the Om Agyana Tamaran? I think I didn't. Can't remember. But I was born in the darkest of ignorance. And my spiritual master has opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. And therefore I offer my... So that's the mood in which we... And then if you were here for the Brahma Sanghita, when they were chanting the Brahma Sanghita prayers before class, there's one verse that goes, Karmani Nidahati Kintu to Bhakti Bhajam. That by practicing bhakti, our pious and impious reactions of previous lives gets eradicated. But really, that's again not so much our focus. That Krishna, I'm going to make a deal with you. I'll do bhakti, you get rid of my karma. Deal? I scratch your back, you scratch mine. Right? But rather, that's not so much our focus. Our focus is just, I'm so fortunate to be able to serve the Supreme Lord and His devotees. Please let me just do some service. And then automatically that all gets taken care of. Is that all right? Is he good? Okay. Yes? Oh, who's next?
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, it may happen that due to some conflict... Due to some conflict with the devotees...
Achha.
They get separated. But after so many times, it comes in your mind... But you don't have that attitude also to go approach the devotee and ask forgiveness. And many times it comes to your mind, you feel disturbed in your devotional life. So how to deal with that things?
I'm not sure I understand the question. I understand how to deal with those things, but I don't know what you mean by those things. So you have a conflict.
And you get separated.
You get separated. What happens? You move to another city or something?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, so you moved to another city, so you're no longer with them.
Yes.
Correct. Are you FaceTime friends? No, don't answer that. Okay, and then you want to beg forgiveness?
Yes.
Then? What's the question?
No, actually.
No, you don't want forgiveness. I'm not sure. Does anyone understand the question? So you want to renew the relationship. That's what you want to do. Okay. So what do you think you should do?
No.
I'm asking you.
I'm asking you.
Some relationship has become a problem, right? How can you renew that relationship? Any ideas? Ladies, they're usually smarter than the men with this kind of details. No idea? Yes, Mataji? A microphone for Mataji?
What we can do is ask for forgiveness and let the past go and move on.
Yes, ask forgiveness is a good start because you need to open the door. But then you need to somehow... one way to talk about this is that trust has been broken. Right? Isn't it? Trust has been broken. And trust is, in one sense, we could say, we can look at things from a different point of view, but trust is one of the keys to a good relationship with anyone. right? And what to speak of other devotees. Would you agree? Trust is very important. We did this yesterday with the Brahmacharya, so let's, if everyone could close your eyes just for 5 seconds and think of a person that you really, really, really trust. Now, don't think of Prabhupada or Radha Swami, come a little lower than that. But someone in your life that you really, really trust, and try to get them in your mind's eye. Okay, you got that? Now, keep your eyes closed. And sorry to do this to you, but think of a person that you really, really don't trust. You don't want to see them. You just don't trust them. They've done things to you in the past. You really, really, really don't trust them. Okay, so open your eyes. Now think of how you communicate with those two people. Is it the same? It's very different, isn't it? When you're with the person you don't trust, you're choosing every word, and you don't want to say anything that's going to end up on the internet or something like that, right? Right. But with this person that you trust, you can pretty much, you open your heart opens up, the lotus of your heart kind of opens up, and you can say things honestly, right? There's a big difference, right? So there's different kinds of trust. There's no trust, right? Then there's distrust. That's even worse than no trust. Like, no trust is, okay, neutral, but distrust. Right? Then there's also this word gullible trust, like really not very smart trust. Right? You meet someone on the street and, you give them your debit card and your PIN number. That's not very smart, right? Right? But then there's trust that's reasonable. And hopefully that's generally what we have amongst devotees. And when you think about it, if you read the Bhagavatam is full of devotees trusting the Lord and trusting the Lord's devotees. Any examples from the Bhagavatam of the devotee trusting Krishna or trusting Krishna's devotees? Ambarish Maharaj. Okay, yes. He trusts, yes. Dhruva Maharaj, very much, yes. Prahlad Maharaj, right? 5-year-old boy. Oh, they went into Agasura like, nope, koi bhagne. Krishna's going to protect us. No problem. Right? Anything else? There's so many. Draupadi, right? Hey, Govinda. Yes. They trusted that Krishna... Even though one time, right, he shook a little bit. But generally speaking, they trust that he was going to keep Govardhan Hill up, right? So there's so many examples of that. And in connected with this is we have to be careful not to blame, to be careful about placing blame on others. Right? My wife was the... principal of the ICSE school in Vrindavan, the Gurukul in Vrindavan many years ago. And when she would walk in and let's say one of the children broke one of the windows and the teacher called the principal in and she said, "Who did this?" And every kid would go like this, right? Not me, everyone, right? We tend to blame others. But if you remember that in the first canto of the Bhagavatam with Maharaj Parikshit and Dharma the bull, right, and who did this to you, right? And it was not ready to place blame, right? Or Srila Prabhupada said we should meditate on these words. He said, "Do not be upset at the agent of your karma." Right? If that Prabhuji took the last gulab jamun, right? Don't be upset. He's just the agent of your karma. Right? Do not be upset at the agent of your karma. The person is just very kindly saying, here's your karma. Tell it. Take it. Right? And Prabhupada writes in the first canto, "A devotee never finds fault with others," or maybe this fourth canto, "but tries to find his own and thus rectify them as far as possible." I think that was in relation to Yudhisthira Maharaj. So these are ways to become a trusting servant of the Lord. Another way to really develop trust in people, have people trust us, is to always honor people who are not present. If someone starts talking badly about another devotee and that devotee is not present, you say, oh, I don't want to talk bad. You know, whatever we want to say about Krishna Das, we can say in front of him, not behind his back. Right? And of course, being respectful. So I was thinking about that today when we were chanting, after Mangalarti, we were chanting the Shikshastakam. And at the end of the second verse, Lord Chaitanya prays, right, that although you've invested all your energies in the holy name, Nanu Raga, I don't have any taste for them. And then so what should be the result of that realization that we don't have taste? Trinada Pisanichana. We should become Hemlock Krishna. I don't have any taste for your holy name. Right? So that idea of respecting others, a great way to develop trust. Another important thing in trust is to be a good communicator, right? Is to be able to communicate our intentions and be clear in talking to others. Because if when there's a lack of communication or miscommunication, then trust can be broken easily. And of course, it's always good to keep our word. Right? It was said that in earlier years, people could make business deals of crores and crores just with a handshake. Right? And didn't have to write so many contracts and things because a person's word was just taken as that they will always follow that. Not so much these days. So thank you, Mataji, for that point because, yeah, a lot about trust. You know, so it's good to apologize or to ask forgiveness, but then we have to do things positive in the relationship. That just nullifies the past, but it doesn't. Now what are we going to do? Does that answer your question? You sure? Okay. Last question. But maybe other people have questions. So, 1 minute. Other questions? Yes. Microphone.
Hare Krishna. Guruji, I want to know what is the fine line between having conflict and Vaishnava Aparad?
What's the between conflict and Vaishnava Aparad? How we should not cross that line. Well, you know, it's always good to be, what do they say, better safe than sorry? So better be a little, not that we try to go right up to the line, but not cross it. But why not be over here someplace, way far away from that line? But it's almost like that there's a difference between a dialogue and a debate. Okay? A dialogue is collaborative. You two or more, you know, you're working together, and a debate is oppositional, right? A dialogue is when you're trying to find a common understanding. That's the goal, and in the debate, winning is the goal, right? So if we see ourselves, and that usually means when you can. Anyone here ever had the experience? You can kind of feel the mode of passion. Yeah. Right. So then it's time to take a step back and be careful what we say. So it's okay to have a different opinion, but we can have a different opinion very respectfully. And we can even say, Prabhu, I really disagree with you. I totally look at that differently than you do. Let's talk about this. But that's different than saying, you are such a fool. Dog, hog, camel, and ass. Right? You know, and things like that. But that's, right? So there's a jump from saying, I disagree with you, to you're a bad person. So we shouldn't make that jump. Okay? Even a person, Prabhupada would say that if we really don't get along with another devotee, then we just respect them from a distance. That's also just respect, and then don't have to interact. If we think I might commit offense by associating with that Prabhu or that Mataji, then from a distance we respect and we associate with others. Is that okay? But I'd say to answer your question, I think it's that jump from a reasonable thing, which is I disagree with you, to you're wrong, and then worse, to you're bad because you're wrong and you disagree with me. Okay. Now again, we're talking about things within the confines of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. But even a person who speaks bogus philosophy, we can still be compassionate to them, right? Sometimes Prabhupada would, if he was speaking to someone and they were just, the conversation wasn't going anywhere, he would tell his servant, bring prasad. And just give them some nice prasadam and help them in that way. Is that okay? Yeah. Where's the mic? Okay, one, then two, and then we'll get back to you.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Sometimes we deal with devotees in...
Sometimes we deal with devotees. Yes.
In terms of give and take for commercially.
They worship
commercially.
You.
Commercial purpose, for business purpose, for job purpose and all that. So it so happens is that some differences arises among devotees and ultimately relationship breaks over money matters.
Achcha. Generally it's a good idea not to do business with devotees. Generally, so, as a general rule.
Like I myself, I've seen it. Practically experienced it, like we are friends, but sometimes because of money comes inside and then relationship goes down.
You lend a devotee money and then he says, listen Prabhu, yasyaham anugrinami hari shetadhanamshan. What can I do? I'm the instrument of your karma to take all your money and not return it. We have to be careful. We don't want to put ourselves in a situation where we can get into, disagreements with other Vaishnavas. So if we really trust someone and there are examples of devotees working together on some kind of venture and it goes quite nicely, right? But we just want to be a little careful. This is for any situation in the world, right? One of the other biggest causes of conflict is unclear expectations, right? So let's say we're entering in any kind, using business as, and you brought up business, I didn't. But in that case, we want to, it's Kali Yuga, we do have to write things down and make things very clear what the expectations are. Right? And in any situation, a matter of fact, unclear expectations can be a problem. You know, we were talking yesterday, if someone joins the Brahmacharya Ashram, right? We want to make clear, what are their expectations if they stay there their whole life? Will they be taken care of if they get sick? Things like that. All those things should be clarified. If someone gets married, there should be clear expectations about, who does what and what the relationship is going to be like. Even in the spiritual master-disciple relationship, it should be clear expectations. Sometimes things are a little unclear, right? Someone writes an email to their Guru Maharaj and they don't get a reply. Right? But was that, what are the four regular, no meeting. And then Guru Maharaj, what do you promise? I promise to answer your emails in 24 hours. And he doesn't, but there can be unclear expectations about a lot of things. Even Krishna, he tries to clarify expectations in the Bhagavad Gita, right? He says, dukalayam asashvitam, anityam asukam loka, right? He says, this is not, material world is not a bed of roses, right? He tries to clarify expectations so that if we get into a difficult situation, we don't say, it's all your fault, Krishna. And Krishna says, I told you, dukalayama sashvatam, you didn't believe me? Anityam asukam loka. Right? So he actually is clarifying expectations very clearly, actually, in the Bhagavad Gita. He also has other expectations that he keeps his promise. Kunteya pratijanihi na me bhakta pranashati. Declare it boldly, my devotee will never perish. So anyway, in any kind of relationship, one big cause of it is unclear expectations. And like we were talking with the brahmachari yesterday, and when expectations are unclear, we make some assumptions. I assume you meant this. No, no, I meant that. Right? And assumptions are the number one cause of conflict. And we were talking yesterday, you see in the Shastra so many examples of assumptions, right? Maharaj Pariksit assumed that Samyak Rishi was actually faking his samadhi, and therefore he garlanded him with a snake, right? Parvati Mataji, she thought Chitraketu was making fun of her husband. She assumed when he was smiling like that, that he was making fun of Lord Shiva. And then big aparad happened because of that, right? Or Narada Muni, at first, didn't he assume that Lord Brahma was the supreme? Until he saw that Lord Brahma was meditating on Krishna. Right, so even in the scriptures, we see so many assumptions, and often leading to aparad. Just like with Mother Sachi, she assumed that Advaitacharya was preaching to Vishwarup to take sannyas. And that was incorrect. Or what was the other one that we did yesterday? The assumption that with the Shaman Taka jewel, that Krishna, they started spreading rumors about Krishna, right, in Dwarka, based on assumptions that who had killed, who was it who killed who? Jambavan. Yeah, anyway, another assumption. So it's another thing we have to be careful about is jumping to conclusions about others, about other people, especially other devotees. Does that answer your question? Yeah? Everyone's so polite, they say yes even if it's no. This Prabhu had a question. You have to turn it on? No?
Hare Krishna.
Pakka. Working.
Prabhuji, are you involved with ISKCON Resolve? And what is your experience in these long years of your spiritual life?
You're calling me old? These long years. I'm involved in ISKCON Resolve. Myself and Brahmatirtha Prabhu, we started ISKCON Resolve in 2002. Many long years ago.
So what is the concept of ombudsman? And what were your experiences in all these years of some strong conflicts coming up to you for resolve like that in context to Vaishnava Aparad, spiritual life, devotees leaving ISKCON like that?
You have 5 hours. I can answer that question. I don't think I'll explain ombudsman in 1 minute, 30 seconds. The ombudsman, the way we use it in ISKCON, which is similar to the way they use it in many parts of the world, is a person that anyone can talk to about anything, any problems that they're having, any conflict, any questions about ISKCON, and know that it's a totally confidential conversation, that it won't go beyond that with that conversation without your permission. So totally confidential. And the ombuds role is to be neutral, but to try to help with whatever the situation, whatever the conflict is. And it's usually try to deal with things in a off-the-record, quiet way instead of making, you know, big splash on Facebook or something like that. Just trying to find ways for devotees to... because when we're in conflict, ultimately what suffers, besides our own spiritual health, is also Prabhupada's mission. Because we get distracted from the mission. So by helping devotees work out their differences, they can refocus on Prabhupada's mission. So I always thought that I'm not a very good preacher, but if I can help preachers refocus on their service, then I'm helping the society. My experience is that when devotees can come together, and if they have a person who's been trained as a neutral third person, as a mediator, then they can learn to empathize with each other, they can share their glasses, and they can see the sincerity of the other Prabhu or the other Mataji, and they can work things out for the pleasure of Krishna. It's harder in ISKCON than in other organizations, non-spiritual organizations, because devotees really care about ISKCON. They care about being a devotee. They put a lot of their identity in being a devotee. They are more attached to ISKCON than they are to Tata. Okay, right. So sometimes they're a little more intense because of that strong feelings about their spiritual life and things like that. But when devotees can come together, especially with a neutral person who can help them communicate with each other, then you know 9 times out of 10 they can walk away at least respecting each other and sometimes embracing one another. So I could go on for days and days about your question, but that's it in a nutshell. Okay? Okay. Any ladies have a question? Okay, Prabhuji, you had a question? Where are you pointing? Way in the back? Oh, Mahaprabhu. He doesn't need a microphone. Wait. Mahaprabhu, you had a question? Or a comment? We'll give you the microphone. Just wait. Someone pass it to our most venerable senior Vaishnava. I once was driving with Mahaprabhu and a policeman pulled us over and wanted to give him a ticket for something. And he just preached to them and the man said, Maharaj. Yes. Does it work? Yeah, it has to be turned on.
I should ask or not to ask?
You probably should not. But go ahead.
Why people who are in our movement is something like previous question, but it's little personal type, that people very deeply connected with us, just like many people who are very closely connected with Srila Prabhupada, and they left. Why this happens?
Why they sometimes have conflicts? Is that your question? Why they left? Well, did they really leave? Like, did Bharat Maharaj leave when he became a deer? Right? We know Nehabri Kamana So Steet Patyavayo Navinte Swapam Apyasa Dharmasya, right? That nothing is lost. And no one ever leaves their relationship with Krishna, right? Because Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hridesha Arjunati, you can't escape Krishna's in our hearts. But sometimes you know the answer, Mahaprabhu. Often because of some aparad, sometimes our bhakti, our path of bhakti is temporarily stopped or maybe not stop, but there's a roadblock there. And Maya is extremely strong for a very good reason, right? Because, you know, there's a nice spiritual practice that we can do, right? We can wake up, when we wake up in the morning, think of some of the things that we are grateful for, right? And so naturally as devotees we would say, you know, Srila Prabhupada, Lord Chaitanya, our spiritual master, the association of devotees, prasadam, right? You know, things that come to our mind. But one time, I was thinking about this recently, and I'm not necessarily suggesting this for anyone else, but I was thinking, I was grateful for Maya. Because Maya forces us or encourages us to be more serious about our Krishna consciousness and to take shelter of Krishna, because we, Maya gives us the realization that we're not such great devotees, right? And that without Krishna's help, we're in big trouble. So Maya really humbles us and hopefully makes us more determined to take shelter of Krishna and to understand that Krishna is our only shelter. My spiritual muscles are not strong enough to get me out of Maya. So I'm actually grateful to Maya for her influence on us. So that's something. But it's very, very rare that devotees really leave Krishna consciousness. For some time, maybe, but so many devotees that I've known who leave come back. It's kind of like a boomerang, right? And often because Maya has given them a nice transcendental kick, right? And they become even more serious sometimes. But you know, and even if at the time when they haven't come back yet, they have a relationship with Prabhupada, with Krishna, and something's going on between Krishna and them that we may not be able to see. Right? Just like when you read about the six children of Vasudev and what's his wife's name? Thank you. I'm just testing you. Yeah. Devaki, right? And you hear about the six children and you think, oh, so terrible, killing those little children. But then when you hear the backstory, right, about who those children are and they represent Kam, Krodh, etc., right, like that, then you say, oh, okay, interesting, right? So we don't know what is happening between that devotee and Prabhupada and Krishna. We're not privy to that. Just like when some people first saw Jada Bharata, they just thought, right? Who, you know, useless, practically a useless human being, right? It was only when Rahugana Maharaj finally got him to speak and preach Krishna consciousness, whoa, right? And he was so we don't know, Mahaprabhu, and that really is between them and Krishna, but it can also be a lesson for us, that we can see that and say, oh, Krishna, I really have to take shelter of you. I really don't ever want to leave the association of devotees. Tandara charana sevi bhakta sanivas. Right? We just want to be in the association of devotees no matter what. So, is that okay? Did that... Yeah? I couldn't hear you, but yeah. So nice to see you. Hare Krishna. So, it is time. I always find if you go after prasadam is ready, then you lose a lot of people's interest. Right? So thank you very much. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna. We would like to express our gratitude to His Grace Brajbihari Prabhu, who was on the way to Pune, but he took out some time. Yesterday he gave his association to the Brahmacharis, conducted a very wonderful seminar, and today also he accepted the giving Bhagavatam and enlightening us, sharing his wisdom with all of us. So let us express our gratitude to His Grace Brajbihari Prabhu in our traditional way. Loudly chanting, Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Hari Bo. His Grace Brajbihari Prabhu ki. Yeah.